Space Couch and Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Brand new year, 2016, and I'm going to be talking about some new movies. One of them is The Hateful Eight, which technically came out last year, just at the very tail end. And also Anomalisa, which came out, like, literally the last one or two days of the year. And will be rolling out throughout the country later on. But I figured it's a good time to talk about it now, because not a whole lot opens on New Year's weekend. But I'm also going to take time to talk about the best and the worst films of 2015. I'll also talk about the news, the trailer park, my box office predictions, and of course the world famous home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, you can find me at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Let's move into the news. Of course, once again, Star Wars is dominating the news because Star Wars The Force Awakens has been cracking so many big records. It's the fastest to $1 billion worldwide. That only took 10 days. Within 10 days, it was in the top 10 highest grossing movies of all time. That's not adjusted for inflation, sure, but that's still an impressive number. $600 million in 12 days in the U.S. alone. That's a huge number. It took, like, Avatar a month to get there. It took Titanic almost its entire run to get there. Now, granted, that was 20 years ago. The other thing that Star Wars had a record on, it was the highest second weekend of any movie ever. Made $149 million for its second weekend. That's a great number for an opening weekend for anything, really. $149 million is nothing to sneeze at for an opening weekend. Only 10 other movies opening weekends have ever done better than $149 million, and that's in Star Wars' second weekend. It was primed to do well because it did so well a week before Christmas, and then Christmas was a huge day. It's still making $30 or $40 million each weekday. Leading into the weekend, it's probably going to top Avatar by the time the weekend's over, at least domestically. Now, one other little piece of Star Wars news that I think is interesting is Carrie Fisher has come out and slammed people on Twitter for body shaming her. Because she's saying people are calling her fat, saying that she should be a role model, and she's complaining that, oh, you know, you don't complain about Harrison Ford or other people, just shut up. And she didn't say shut up, she said something else that I can't say on the radio. But here's the thing. First of all, we need to, as a society, stop using Twitter as an example of terrible behavior, because you have access to the entirety of the human race on Twitter, and the internet itself has always been a place for people to act like jerks without any consequence. So this is nothing new. Stop taking a handful of comments that people make on Twitter and then saying, well, this is everybody. Fanboys in general are body shaming Carrie Fisher. I don't really think that's happening. Now, maybe she's feeling it because she recently joined Twitter and she's getting reaction. And it gives you direct reaction. But second of all, Carrie Fisher did not look good in The Force Awakens. I'm sorry. And it's not because she was overweight. It's not because she put on a couple pounds. It's also not because she necessarily got old. It's because she had years of drug and alcohol abuse that kind of ruined her body. And then she Botoxed her face up so much, she couldn't even deliver her lines. She was slurring through her line. I thought she was having behavioral flashbacks to the 80s. Now, I still enjoyed it for what it was. When she showed up on screen, I wasn't taken aback because she'd gotten fat. I was taken aback because she looked plastic. She looked like a CGI character. And now, third of all, it's untrue that people aren't talking about how Harrison Ford looked old. I was walking out of the theater with a radio producer who saw the movie with me, and that was one of the first things he commented on. Why? Because it's 30 years in the future. The only character who wasn't being criticized for looking old was Chewbacca. This dovetails into an interesting other issue, this neo-feminism complaint about Star Wars toys, the fact that there's no Rey in some of the Star Wars packs. We've seen this before when people were complaining about Avengers Age of Ultron not having Black Widow toys, or Guardians of the Galaxy not having Gamora toys. But these are not decisions that are made in a vacuum. It's not just somebody saying, hey, let's just not include Rey. This stuff is product tested and focus grouped. And there's a real consumer reason why they have fewer girl toys. Now, what's interesting is I saw an article, and when I was kind of looking up some of this stuff, I saw an article talking about, oh, well, Star Wars is doing so well because of the female audience. That's stretching it a bit. Even after the fanboy excitement burned off in the first couple days, 62% of the viewing audience for Star Wars was male. And yeah, 38% is nothing to sneeze at. So that's not as skewed as the 80% female demographic of Twilight. But it's still a hugely sizable difference and nowhere even close to an even split. You have a, you go to an election with those numbers and you're sunk. You're 24 points behind. And on top of it, if you actually do the research on the type of toys that are out there, this Christmas, the Star Wars toys was the second on the list for boys right after Lego. And yes, girls had it on their list too, but it was way, way, way down at number 10, behind stuff like Barbie, which was number one, Frozen, Monster High, American Girls specific dolls, Disney princesses. These are all very girl-centric stuff. Star Wars is this teeny tiny little sliver of girls that are buying Star Wars toys. Yeah, it's the top 10 list, but it's after the huge ones. It's the second on the list for boys. And that's not me making a value judgment. That's just the way it is. Boys want Star Wars toys more than women do. And just because you're a woman and you want Star Wars toys does not mean that Disney and Mattel or whoever's making the toys needs to create them just for you so you don't write a nasty blog post about it when they don't really sell. I was a boy growing up. No one wanted a Princess Leia action figure. I think some of us had them because they kind of came up because there were only a handful at the beginning. But we were not out there as kids collecting the Princess Leia dolls. Speaking of Princess Leia, in this whole diatribe of Carrie Fisher, she's complaining about, oh, she's telling Daisy Ridley, don't let yourself be taken advantage of. She is obfuscating the past. When she did Return of the Jedi and got in the Slave Leia outfit, she had, at least in an interview I read at the time, she was talking about how she went to Lucas and said, why am I always dressed up so heavy? I mean, in Star Wars, she's in these big, long, flowing robes. And so she wanted something different. So they gave her the Slave Leia outfit at her request. And now it's considered, oh, you know, this is misogynistic. No, it's not. This is what she wanted when she was young and fit and in her early 20s. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. It's a pretty depressing week for the trailer park because it's all the stuff that's opening in the early part of 2016. The first one I want to highlight is a February 3rd movie, The Choice.
I have a confession. My friends like you better than they like me.
Yeah, I was afraid that was going to happen.
Why do you make it so hard for me to flirt with you?
If I made it easy, you wouldn't flirt anymore. I shouldn't have said that. Don't even think I didn't do that.
Because you bother me.
Gabby!
Where is she? Where's Gabby?
She's in intensive care.
Puke. This is a Nicholas Sparks movie. Big surprise. Somebody's going to get killed. There's cheating. There's unrequited love. And it's probably taking place in the South with weeping willow trees in Savannah. It looks like absolute crap. Let's talk about another terrible trailer. That one is Everybody Wants Some. Opens April 15th.
This ain't high school, man. We had a new level here.
I'm seriously worried about these new guys. Oh!
I'm pretty sure that that is a new school record.
This is the new film by Richard Linklater, the Oscar-nominated director of Boyhood, and it's appealing to the people who love Dazed and Confused. I've never loved Dazed and Confused. I always thought Dazed and Confused was a mean-spirited nonsense movie that had the most narrow view of high school. It's basically a movie that stoners watch and go, that's high school. And there were so many other people that went to high school that weren't stoners who don't identify with it. This is college. And I'm watching this going, this just looks like Dazed and Confused, only it's with slightly older characters. And it's kind of pathetic. Richard Linklater, you're in your 50s. And you're still making stoner movies about people doping up in high school. It's just, ugh. This looks awful. That's it for the trailer park. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the new films, The Hateful Eight and Anomalisa. Because we can. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, riding into the sunset with the new movie reviews. The first one let's talk about is The Hateful Eight. Quentin Tarantino directs this Western about a bounty hunter snowed in at a haberdashery with his prisoner, suspecting that one of the other guests is there to free her.
What make a man brave a blizzard, kill in cold blood?
Okay, everybody, hear this. I'm taking this woman to hang. Reward's $10,000. That money's mine, boys.
No one said this job's supposed to be easy.
Nobody said it's supposed to be that hard, neither.
I am not a knee-jerk Quentin Tarantino fan. I generally like his movies. He doesn't have that many of them. I think this is, what, his eighth movie over, like, 23 years. I've gotten annoyed with some of his more recent stuff. In particular, I was not a big fan of Death Proof because it had all the dialogue, but it wasn't competently delivered because he gave so much of it to Zoe Bell. And while she can do stunts, she is not a good actress. Not even in the least. And the biggest complaint I've had over the last three, because it's Django Unchained, Inglourious Basterds, and Death Proof. My complaints about Tarantino's movies is the person who likes most to hear Quentin Tarantino dialogue is Quentin Tarantino himself. And that's so clear in Inglourious Basterds. The long extended speeches of Christoph Waltz in Inglourious Basterds, while they're well done and they're well acted, they just go on forever. And it just becomes masturbatory with him writing these long, just completely unrealistic soliloquies. And you see that also a little bit, not as much, but you see it a little bit with Django Unchained when Leonardo DiCaprio is giving the whole speech about skulls and phrenology. It just goes on and on and on and on. And I have felt that his last couple movies were not exactly what he wanted to do. I think he and Robert Rodriguez were able to achieve in the theater what they were going for with Grindhouse, but that didn't do well. But then he came off of two hits, both Inglourious Basterds and Django Unchained, and he has the clout now. He had big budget movies. He had big blockbuster movies, movies that made a lot of money for the studios. So he could say to him, hey, I'm going to shoot this on 70mm. Hey, it's going to be 3 hours long. And hey, I'm going to do a traveling road show. And I'm just going to do what I want to do. And I think he achieved that. And that's kind of for the movie's benefit. The Hateful Eight is an expertly put together film. And I'm not just going to have a little party over the fact it's in 70mm. I haven't seen it in 70mm. I've seen the 70mm cut. And I think it's neat to have an overture. And I think it's neat to have an intermission. I don't necessarily think that that's something we need to bring back. That's a bit of the past. That was sort of like movie houses in the 50s, 60s, and earlier. But it's a neat cinematic experience. But I think human beings are able to sit through a 3-hour movie without having to have an intermission. They're cool little remnants of the past, but that's not what makes a movie good. And the cinematography is gorgeous, yes. But what makes a movie great is the interaction. And while you have some grandstanding, in particular by Samuel L. Jackson in his role, you have a lot of back and forth. You have a lot of great actors, people like Tim Roth, and you got Kurt Russell, and you've got Jennifer Jason Leigh, and you've got Walton Goggins, who is fantastic in the movie, who's underrated. I think people are looking past his performance, but it's one of the best performances you're going to see this year. And in a way, it sort of reminds me a lot of Reservoir Dogs, because it is this single-room movie. Yeah, in Reservoir Dogs, they flash back to different things, but most of the movie takes place in this one room. And that's essentially what you've got here in The Hateful Eight. It's everything that Quentin Tarantino wanted to get done in this movie, and he got it done, and it works. And it's a beautiful-looking film. Now, what's interesting about the film is when I've gone on the radio and I've done my call-in interviews in various stations around the country, I've run into people saying, well, I'm going to protest this movie because the police want to protest this movie. Because Quentin Tarantino has come out there and made some pretty inflammatory comments about police, which is, of course, a calculated effort on his part to get press. The police unions have done more to raise awareness for The Hateful Eight than anything Quentin Tarantino could have done. Because they're talking about it. It's in the national news. And here's the problem, though, with this boycott of it. Everyone I've talked to who's going to boycott this movie wasn't going to see it anyway. Like my mother. My mother's like, I don't want to see it. He says some horrible things. Like, when have you ever gone and seen a Quentin Tarantino movie at all, let alone in the theater? I'm just saying it's a dumb boycott because the people that are going to go see this movie are not the people that are going to boycott it. You can only be effective with a boycott if the people boycotting are going to use the product anyways. This is why the Dixie Chicks had such a devastating thing happen to them when they essentially offended their core audience and then they boycotted them. Well, yeah, they alienated their core audience about something that had nothing to do with their music, and so the people stopped buying their records and they sunk as a band. Now, if the Indigo Girls had come out and made some comment about President Bush overseas, you could have had everyone say, I'm going to boycott it, but nobody who bought the Indigo Girls CDs or went to their concerts would have cared what they said. It would have actually championed that. That's why Michael Moore could go out and say things against President Bush and people would still go see his movies, because the people who are seeing Michael Moore movies weren't going to be upset at what Michael Moore said. And the people that were fans of President Bush probably were not going to go see a lot of Michael Moore movies. So go ahead and boycott. It's not going to make any difference because the core audience isn't going to boycott, and the people that are boycotting weren't going to see it anyways. I wasn't boycotting it. I think it's a good movie. I had to see it anyways. It's my job, but I love the movie. I think it's great. I can separate the director from the director's personal views, and I thought it was a fantastic movie. So I'm going to say The Hateful Eight totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is Anomalisa. It's Charlie Kaufman's latest movie. A man stuck in a rut of a mundane life goes on a business trip and falls in love with a woman he finds completely unique.
What is it to be human? What is it to ache? What is it to be alive? Look for what is special about each individual. Focus on that. Remember, there is someone out there for everyone. I think you're extraordinary.
Why?
I don't know yet. It's just obvious to me that you are.
This is actually an animated movie. It's this weird sort of stop motion-ish computer augmented film. And the reason that works is because it's very surreal. All the things Charlie Kaufman has done, stuff like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Being John Malkovich, all these movies are surreal in some way. And Charlie Kaufman is one of the most unique writers in Hollywood, and he's consistently delivers scripts that are very, very different. And they don't always reach the mainstream, especially ones that he directs, like Synecdoche, New York. But this one allows us to look at our own mundaneness of our life. It's a thick movie for as simple as the story is. And it shows somebody trying to emerge from their humdrum existence and finding out who the real villain is in trapping you in that humdrum existence. It's got some great performances, particularly by David Thewlis, who does the main guy, and Tom Noonan, who essentially does the voices for everybody else in this world because it's so mundane, everyone has the same voice. And then Jennifer Jason Leigh is the unique girl. It's out there. It's bizarre. It's unlike anything you're going to see. And it's worth seeing, especially if you want to see something very different than anything else you've ever seen this year or next year or last year. So I'm going to say that Anomalisa rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for this segment. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the best films of 2015 on Fat Guys at the Movies. At the Movies with Kevin Carr. I've wrapped up the reviews for the new movies. Let's talk about the best of the year. This is the end of 2015. We've seen that. It's gone. The old year has turned decrepit and decayed and fallen apart, and now we got Baby New Year in a fresh, chubby little baby's bottom diaper. So let's talk about what were the greatest movies that came out in 2015. And I'm going to just give you my top three. Number three is a movie I recently talked about, very recently, and it meant a lot to me, not just for my childhood, but also for my children going forward and just entertainment in general. I present to you the number three best film of 2015.
Nothing will stand in our way. I will finish
what you started.
There are stories about what happened.
It's true. All of it.
That's right, Star Wars, The Force Awakens. I know that's easy. I know that makes me a bit of a shill. I know I'm just a stupid little fanboy. But I loved Star Wars, The Force Awakens. I actually saw it again. I just recently watched it in IMAX 3D. And it's incredibly rewatchable. It has such entertainment value. And I know there's problems with it. And I know there's plot holes. And I know there's flaws. And I know it's repetitive from the first movie. And that's okay. Not every movie needs to be this deep philosophical deconstruction of our society. It can be an incredibly entertaining film. I was 5 when Star Wars, the first one, came out in 1977. It became a part of me. And as much as I like the prequels, and I've defended the prequels before, and I've rewatched the prequels very recently, and they still work for what they're going. I don't think anyone ever gets them in what Lucas was trying to do. But it's a brilliant series, and what The Force Awakens did is it tapped into what everyone loved about the first 3 movies, Star Wars, Empire, Jedi, continued these characters. We get to see more of them, and it's launching a whole new chapter in the Star Wars universe, which I'm looking forward to because I know there's going to be people that are going to be Star Wars out, and they're going to be people in about 5 or 6 years are going to be like, oh, Star Wars fatigue, just as much as they're saying superhero fatigue. But for me, it's a great time. I'm so glad to see the series back on top and leaning forward, going ahead. So that's my number 3. My number 2 of the year is another one I've recently talked about. And I'm not actually going to play a trailer for that one simply because I just did play a trailer for that one. And no, it's not because Star Wars is on the list twice. My second favorite movie of 2015 was The Hateful Eight. And I know there's a lot of people that are a little bit irked at Quentin Tarantino. And like I said, I am not a knee-jerk fan of his. I don't just immediately like things that he does. And I think there's a lot of people that do that. You get that a lot. Tarantino, you get that a lot with. You get that a lot with Christopher Nolan. I'm not necessarily that kind of a person. I think Christopher Nolan's done some great movies. I also think he's done some mediocre ones, like Interstellar or The Prestige or Insomnia. But he's also done some great ones like Memento and The Dark Knight. But Quentin Tarantino, I loved Pulp Fiction. I thought Pulp Fiction was wholly unique and very different and very cool. And it sort of changed the face of movies in the mid-90s. I don't necessarily think The Hateful Eight's going to change anything, but I still think it's his best movie since Pulp Fiction. The Hateful Eight is so expertly done. And there's a weird tonal break at the intermission that I initially wasn't cool with, but eventually, as the movie played out, I did enjoy. And I struggled with this one because when you see a movie like this, especially at the end of the year, it's so hard because there's such stress to get all your stuff done by the end of the year. You can't just let it brew and sit there and say, oh, yeah, you know, a couple months later, yeah, that was one of my favorites. You kind of have to make that decision early. And after seeing it, I said, well, you know, is there anything that bothers me about the movie? That's kind of how I framed it. Is there anything that I didn't like? Is there anything that I'm going to say, yeah, I'm going to knock a couple points off? Like with Star Wars, The Force Awakens, I did knock off a couple points for it being a little too similar to the first Star Wars movie. I only knocked off 0.5 star. It was still 4.5 stars for me. But The Hateful Eight, I couldn't think of a single thing about the movie that I thought wasn't done exactly as it should have been. And that's rare. So that's why, to me, that was a 5-star movie. That's why it's number 2 on my list. It's totally worth seeing, and I think it's going to do extremely well. It's going to do very well against Star Wars simply because it's going to draw from a completely different fan base. It's very different people. Families are going to see Star Wars. Are already seeing Star Wars. It's the more adult crowd that are going to see Quentin Tarantino movies. The guy doesn't do PG or PG-13. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I'm talking about my top movies of 2015. Now let's talk about the first one, the number one, the one that I thought is the best movie of the year. If you follow how many movies I've ever given a 5-star to this year, you'll know which one this is. And here it is. Drum roll, please.
State Department is pulling an agent that specializes in cartel activity.
FBI!
You'll be part of the team.
What's our objective?
To dramatically overreact.
We're not American.
What do you work for now?
I go where I'm sent.
Gotta be careful around these people.
I just want to know what I'm getting into.
You saw things you shouldn't have seen.
That's right, Sicario. This one was the first movie of 2015 that impressed me to a huge degree. I mean, certain something like Ant-Man I thought was enjoyable and it was better than I thought it would be. And I was kind of like, oh, that was actually really kind of cool. Sicario was one of those I wasn't necessarily looking forward to, but when I saw it, I was sucked in. And part of what makes it work is it's not just a police procedural. And what's funny is Emily Blunt's character, she's sort of a, for as much as everyone says that Rey is a Mary Sue in Star Wars, Emily Blunt's the Mary Sue in Sicario. She is there to serve one purpose. She's the MacGuffin of the movie. She's there to serve one purpose, to propel something that you don't even find out about until later. And everything else about the movie can exist and happen around her. All she is the observer. She's the audience surrogate, really, at this one. So I don't necessarily think she's great in the movie, but I think the movie itself is great around her, because what it does is it takes this drug movie, story about cartels and the drug war down on our U.S.-Mexico border, and it treats it like a horror movie. If you're a horror movie fan and you haven't seen Sicario, you need to go see this, because this is a creepy movie. Similar to how Silence of the Lambs was not a police procedural, it was a horror movie told in a police procedural way. And sort of same thing with Psycho. Psycho was a mystery told as a horror movie. So that's part of the genius of Sicario, and that's why I liked it so much. So if you haven't seen it, check it out. It's just recently on DVD and Blu-ray. A couple other ones that have topped my list, the Shaun the Sheep movie. I love that. I love animation. It's one of the first times animation hasn't hit my top three. But it's still adorable, Aardman animation about a group of sheep trying to find their farmer who has disappeared from amnesia. Infinitely Polar Bear is also on the list. It's my number five. This one is a smaller one. It kind of went under the radar. Stars Mark Ruffalo and Zoe Saldana, and it deals with bipolar disorder. But what's nice about it is it doesn't make it overly depressing and scapegoated. When a movie tries to show mental illness, they try and show mental illness as this debilitating thing that makes people, it's impossible for them to live their lives. And that's not what this is. Infinitely Polar Bear is a sweet story about kids just living with the fact that their dad has bipolar disorder, and they're working it into their lives. It's semi-autobiographical for the director. It's a great movie. It's worth seeing, and it's weirdly uplifting. Extraordinary Tales, I also love. That was the animated film taking Edgar Allan Poe's stories and poems and animating them with different directors like Guillermo del Toro. I Am Big Bird, the Carol Spinney story, one of the documentaries on the list. It's just a charming look at Big Bird and the guy behind Big Bird. And also on the list in terms of documentaries was Welcome to Leith, which was about neo-Nazis and a hate group trying to infiltrate a town. Chilling and how they were doing it. Totally true. And then two other ones, Spotlight, which is up there for a lot of people. Great look at Boston Globe blowing the lid off the Catholic priest sexual abuse scandal. And then finally, It Follows, one of the more innovative horror films of the year. Very creepy, lots of fun. That's it for Best of the Year. When I come back from a break, I'm going to be talking about Worst of the Year, the box office and the home cinema roundup. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, wrapping up the show. And before I leave you on your merry way, I'm going to talk about the worst films of 2015. Now, very recently, I saw an online discussion in a critics group I'm with between critics about whether or not they like the idea of a worst of the year list or like the Razzie Awards. I don't like the Razzie Awards because I think they try and get too cute. It's more about the people writing the Razzie Awards than actually acknowledging the actual movies that suck. But I've always rejected the thing where people say, well, that's just mean-spirited. I'm like, no, I had to sit through this crap. And then I saw somebody say, well, that's just opinion. I'm like, well, so's best of the year. If you are going to make a best of the year list, That's your opinion, so why not make a worst of the year list? I have a lot of fun with worst of the year, because what I find fascinating about these movies, not these independent films that are made with blood, sweat, and tears, or some grassroots independent thing that somebody shot on their iPhone and edited on their home computer using iMovie. I understand that those movies have a huge thing to overcome. And I can't pick on those too much, because it's such a struggle to make a bad movie, let alone any kind of movie. But when you are funded, when you've got a studio behind you, and when you have stars, and when you have a budget in the millions of dollars or tens of millions of dollars or more, there's no excuse for making crap. So when there's crap made, I like to champion what crap that is. And so let's count down my top three worst movies of 2015. The first one, Narcissism at Play in Full Force.
Are we ever going to talk about it?
Nessa?
Do you hate me?
You know my reason.
You want to hurt me?
You're nothing.
Hurt me?
Come on. Just stop!
It's the perfect day.
This would be By the Sea, starring Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt in her directing of it. She directed Unbroken, which came out about a year ago. Did very well. I don't think she was necessarily a great director. I think it was felt kind of ghost directed. And here was her trying to be artistic. This was a movie where she was just showing how beautiful she was, and she got away with it saying, no, I'm not being narcissistic. The character's narcissistic. I'm just writing the character, playing her myself, and then directing it and telling the cinematographer to take all these gorgeous shots of me. It's one of the most boring movies of the year. Thank God it was shorter than I thought it was when I went to go see it. It is terrible. By the Sea, avoid this one. The next movie, number two on the list, one came out about half a year ago, came out in the summer, and the movie starring some pretty big names, and by all intents and purposes, should have been a much better film, but it wasn't, and here we go.
Aloha. I want to introduce you to your Air Force liaison. She's a fast burner.
A double espresso?
Morning, sir. I'm so jacked for today.
Make that a triple.
The old ex-girlfriend. Pause for the memories.
I don't even remember why we broke up.
Because you're a workaholic who creates work to avoid real work.
Yeah, well, I'm still working on that.
You wrecked everything, and I put my life back together in spite of you. I think that you came back here for a reason. Let's just talk about it before I explode.
That's right. Aloha. Starring Bradley Cooper. This was not Bradley Cooper's year. Yeah, he kicked it off with American Sniper, even though that was technically a 2014 movie. But he had stuff like that movie he did with Jennifer Lawrence in the beginning of the year about the coal mining. That thing was terrible. Serena or something like that. And then he did Aloha. And it's directed by Cameron Crowe. It stars Emma Stone as a woman who is half Hawaiian. Now, Emma Stone looks about as Hawaiian as Darth Vader looks Hawaiian. But this movie is supposed to be this honoring of Hawaii, at the same time whitewashing all the characters. It's the most inane love story that doesn't really work. And then it turns into this weird spy movie with Bill Murray. This is a mess of a film. It is more competent than The Room, but not by much. But then let's talk about the number one worst movie of 2015. And here it is. Drumroll, please.
Oh my God. You're internet famous. That's like the second best thing to being actually famous.
I'm Jem.
This is exactly the artist that Starlight has been looking for. With a little help, of course.
Ladies and gentlemen, the internet sensation, Jem!
Who is Jem? We're getting reports that's the number one trending topic on Twitter.
The version of me that they want doesn't exist.
You're under contract. The concert's going as planned.
That's right. Jem and the Holograms. People thought I forgot about this one. I thought everyone forgot about this one. Came out just like 2 months ago. That is how forgettable this movie was. This was a film that was based on this cartoon. And I watched some of the cartoon. The cartoon's hilarious. It's from the 80s. It's this weird pop bubblegum movie that is sort of like Josie and the Pussycats on ecstasy. It's just, it's a bizarre animated filmation kind of cartoon. That's adorable and fun and silly and goofy. And then they decided to take all the cool stuff out of it, and they just made it this generic story of these girls that make it big as rock stars, and they stripped any sort of uniqueness or coolness out of it and just turned it into some really low-rent, substandard Disney Channel wannabe Cheetah Girls movie. And it's so bad and so forgettable and painful to watch. This topped my Nicholas Sparks movies for this year. That's how bad some of these movies are this year. So yeah, Gem and the Holograms, worst movie of the year. Other ones in there, Results, which is a small one. James White, another small one. Queen of Earth, another small one. All these three, if you missed them, you're not missing anything. 90 Minutes in Heaven, starring Anakin Skywalker as a priest who goes to heaven for 90 minutes. This is terrible. It has nothing to do with heaven. It just has to do with him moping around after an accident. Ricky and the Flash, which I know a lot of people liked because of Meryl Streep, but I thought it was terrible and stupid. The Gallows, which is the only found footage movie, I think, on the list, which kind of is amazing considering how bad found footage is. But The Gallows is terrible. And then Magic Mike XXL. It's just a pointless movie that it's awful. And I know some people loved it for sort of its ironic take on film, but it's bad. It was worse than the first. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. I said $150 million for Star Wars The Force Awakens over Christmas week. I was almost dead on. It was $149 million. In fact, the original estimates were like $152 or $153 million, so I was right in the middle. So I was dead on with that one. The other thing that's interesting, though, isn't just The Force Awakens, because everyone knew that was going to win. It was the fact that Daddy's Home made almost $39 million, which is huge numbers for Christmas weekend, going up against Star Wars. Joy did $17 million, which was pretty good. And then Concussion made about $10.5 million. Point Break didn't even crack $10 million. It came in at number 8. The Hateful Eight, this is what I was saying earlier about the fact that boycotts aren't going to work, because the fans who want to see it are seeing it already. It made $4.6 million in just 100 theaters on its 70mm roadshow. Now, they're essentially four-walling it kind of thing, but still, that was like a $46,000 per screen average. That's doing very well, so I expect that one to pick up quite a bit this week. But still, the 800-pound gorilla is going to be Star Wars. Since I already did a kajillion dollars and I already did half a kajillion dollars, let's do quarter of a kajillion dollars. I'm just going to say Star Wars is going to make $75 million over the course of the weekend. It'll probably make even more than that. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. A surprising number of films are coming out on DVD and Blu-ray this week, which I always find interesting because you'd expect the bigger releases to come out before Christmas because people are buying gifts. But I guess this works because people have gift cards and money to spend. The Intern is probably my top pick of the week. That's the one starring Anne Hathaway and Robert De Niro. He's her intern. It's directed by Nancy Myers, who I think is very charming. She gets a little bit personal in it, and you can tell she's kind of grinding through some personal issues on this one, but still, it's a charming movie, very well acted. Hitman Agent 47 is also out there. Not great, not good, but there's certain things about it that I didn't hate, I guess, although it's way up there as a movie I didn't like. A Walk in the Woods, which is miscast because it's Robert Redford playing like 20 years younger than he should be. Nick Nolte's surprisingly funny and charming in this movie. It's about guys hiking the Appalachian Trail in their 70s. Well, they're supposed to be their 50s, but these guys are old. It's good for the old crowd. Bone Tomahawk, which very barely just made it off my honorable mentions list. Very good movie with Kurt Russell, another Western with him with his glorious Western mustache. It's the cannibal movie you want to check out, not Green Inferno. This is the one about, in the Old West, Kurt Russell and a couple guys are trying to find a woman who's been kidnapped by a cannibalistic tribe. And then from TV, you've got Shameless Season 5 and Ray Donovan Season 3. Next week, welcome to January, when the releases are not so good, with The Forest, The Masked Saint, and the 2015 good release, The Revenant. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.